This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Last week, House Republicans began to make good on their long-running promise to investigate President Biden's family and finances. One of their main targets is the president's son, Hunter Biden. They want to look into his past business dealings and how he ended up on the board of a Ukrainian oil company while his father was vice president. He has also faced scrutiny for erratic behavior stemming from his addiction to crack cocaine and alcohol. Hunter says he is now sober, but he is already under a federal investigation for failing to pay a $2 million tax bill, which he eventually paid. Joining me to talk about all this is Adam Entes. He's part of a team at the New York Times that wrote a big investigation into what's true and what's untrue about the Republicans' allegations against the president's son. Welcome to Press Play.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, what exactly are Republicans claiming Hunter Biden and his dad have done wrong to warrant this investigation?
Well, the first part of it is the part that has the grain of truth to it, which is that Hunter did serve on the board of this Ukrainian gas company, and he did get paid a lot of money. And it's hard to argue that he didn't get that position because of who his father was, right?
This is Burisma.
That's the famous
Burisma that we heard about during the first impeachment of former President Trump.
That's right. And so, you know, obviously that's true, right? You know, Hunter was paid a lot of money to be on that board. What the Republicans then go further, though, they then say that Joe Biden himself was involved, right? That Joe Biden himself, knew about this, was benefiting from it. And as you know, from that period in 2019, they were claiming that that Joe Biden intervened in Ukrainian politics to protect his son. That was the unsubstantiated allegation back then. What you have is a common theme here, which is, you know, Hunter's activities, it's not flattering. At times, it's really quite disturbing the closer you look at it. But it's just not the story that they're telling, right? Mm-hmm. Where his father was sort of the chairman of his son's global corruption campaign to make money for the Biden family and for Joe Biden himself.
Okay, well, take us back to 2014, and that's when Hunter Biden ends up on the board of Burisma, and his father is vice president of the United States. And through your reporting, as you say, is it pretty clear that he got this job because the head of this company hoped to gain some access to the White House?
I think what you have to keep in mind here is the context, right? Hunter's older brother, Beau, is at this point been diagnosed with brain cancer, which is pretty much a secret, but he's dying, right? And there's financial strain in the Biden household, and Hunter's worried about money. Mm-hmm. And so Hunter at this point has attached himself to another businessman named Devin Archer, who has a lot of experience in international finance. And he ends up meeting the owner of this company, Zlochevsky. He's the oligarch who owns Burisma. After they have this meeting, the oligarch decides to do a background check on Devin Archer. And what it said was, you know, Archer is connected in the Democratic politics through John Kerry, and his business partner is Hunter Biden, the son of the vice president. Mm. What happened is that Hunter goes to Lake Cuomo to attend a conference, and the oligarch kind of surprises him and just kind of shows up, and they do a private walk along the lake, and the oligarch offers him the seat and basically says, you know, we're going to pay you a lot of money to be on this board. And Hunter thinks about it for a few days and decides to do it. He wants the money, right? And he sort of rationalizes taking this position is not going against U.S. government policy in Ukraine, because part of that policy is that Ukraine needs to be more energy independent from Russia. Mm-hmm. But the other part of U.S. policy is an anti-corruption agenda that his own father was pushing, which obviously Hunter tying himself to this oligarch was potentially putting himself, you know, against. Nonetheless, Hunter decided to do it. The positives outweighed the negatives, and he takes the job. And so one of the issues is his father, based on my reporting, talking to Hunter, talking to White House officials, talking to others around Joe Biden had no idea that Hunter was going to do this. Hmm. And so he calls him up and he says, I hope you know what you're doing. And then Hunter says, I do. But he doesn't say to him, you know, get off that board.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's where there's a kernel of truth in what the Republicans are saying, but it's a big departure from the notion that Joe Biden was part of it and orchestrating it.
Okay, so he's on the board, and does he then try to do anything untoward? Does he try to do anything that could be possibly viewed as illegal or at least unethical?
Right. So Hunter writes an email to Devin Archer shortly after he decides to do this, in which he says, you know, like, we have to be careful here. Like, there are rules and laws that I just don't want to deal with, that I don't want to cross these lines. And one of those lines that he enumerated in that email, he didn't want to engage with American officials on behalf of the company or the oligarch who owns it. Certainly the company Burisma wanted Hunter to engage with U.S. officials on their behalf and on behalf of that oligarch in particular, to try to address his visa problems, his problems in the United States. But what's clear in the emails is that people around Hunter and Hunter, but his business manager, his other advisors, were basically deflecting those requests. And they ended up hiring others to do that kind of work so that Hunter wouldn't do that kind of work himself. So he gets the money, but he doesn't really do this other stuff. And frankly, he keeps on getting this money even after he becomes addicted to crack cocaine in 2016. Mm-hmm. He's really not doing much work for them, but he is still getting that money, and his father is vice president.
Mm. How much money did he get all told?
I don't know the exact amount, but he was making approximately $600,000 a year for this, which is a lot of money. But one thing, again, context is important here. He had a very expensive lifestyle in Washington, and that $600,000 a year he got from Burisma did not cover it. And it wasn't just his lifestyle. It was his family's lifestyle. They lived in a house that they really couldn't afford. Him and his wife sent their three daughters to a very expensive private school in Washington. And later, when they got a little older, they went to very expensive universities. And so the costs were very high. Plus, by the middle of 2016, he's a crack addict. You know, he needs mm-hmm. to buy drugs. The rehabs he went to, because you know, the family wanted to keep all this secret. He didn't just go to any rehabs. We're talking $15,000 for 1 week.
Wow.
And so that increases the pressure on him. Not only he didn't want to give up Burisma because he needed the money, but he had to make more money, which meant he had to take bigger risks in order to kind of keep all the balls in the air. And that's sort of what was going on. That's where he gets into trouble.
So what are these bigger risks? Because he's also involved in a failed deal with a Chinese private investment fund.
So there's sort of two China deals here. One of them is a venture that starts earlier around 2013, 2014, which really just kind of never pans out, partly because of the public scrutiny that it received later on. And that was about taking money, Chinese government money, and investing it in American companies and infrastructure. That's the first one. He's sober at that point. When he does Burisma, he's sober. So in other words, you can't use the drug thing to excuse his decision-making there, right?
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to 2017. He's using crack all the time. His wife is no longer with him. His business manager is gone. All these people that were sort of his safety net are gone. He's really by himself now. He's trying to keep all these balls in the air, and he goes down the path. Yeah.
And when you say he's doing crack all the time, what do you mean by that? Like every day, all day long?
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind he is occasionally in and out. It's one of these cycles, right? He has a period of incredibly heavy drug use, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a few months. And then maybe he has a few weeks when he's gone back to rehab and he's clean, right? And then he relapses again. It's the cycles that he's in. And when, you know, I mean, you could tell actually if reading closely in the emails, you can tell when he's sober because his emails are actually written coherently, right? There's fewer spelling mistakes. When he is using, suddenly it's like broken English kind of stuff, right? Very mm-hmm. sloppy. And so in 2017, to get back to the business stuff, you know, he's using drugs a lot. He didn't pay his taxes. He doesn't pay it again in 2018. He really needs to get money. And he was approached about this tycoon, this Chinese tycoon, who was at the time running this multi-billion dollar Chinese energy company, who kind of, you know, seemed like he wanted to attach himself to Hunter. Keep in mind, the same tycoon was attaching himself to Republicans as well, including some Republicans, you know, that had that were close to Donald Trump. So Hunter enters these negotiations with him, and in the summer of 2017, they reach an agreement on a joint venture. Approximately $5 million is transferred to set up this joint venture. And when this happens, Hunter is obviously excited. He thinks he's hit the payday, right? This is going to solve all of his problems. But there are some weird things that start happening. Maybe weird, it's not the right word, but I see them as weird. The oligarch pulls Hunter aside at one point and tells him that he's concerned that one of his underlings is under investigation from the Justice Department and the FBI. Hmm. And he later was charged and sentenced and convicted for being involved in an international corruption scheme. And what happens is the tycoon flies back to China after the arrest of his underling. And he is picked up later by Chinese authorities that reportedly for corruption. And that deal that Hunter wanted disappears. And he's basically back again, heavily using crack, and his financial prospects are appear to be in ruins. And this is like in a period when his father was considering at that point entering the race to run against Trump in 2020.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. And so where does the gun and the laptop figure into all this? Because we do hear so much about Hunter Biden's laptop and the fact that he bought a gun under false pretenses, if you will, that he bought a gun and said that he wasn't on drugs, but he was.
Right. So this is a period that's occurring. It's roughly happens within a 6 month period in kind of the fall of 2018 and early 2019. Hunter just lost this Chinese deal that he thought was going to save him. He's really in a complete free fall in that period of 2018. You know, he came out of rehab. He did one more rehab stint, and it's not really clear, you know, based on my interviews with his friends and associates and based on the close reading of those emails, whether that stuck for how long that rehab kept him sober. It's not clear. Bottom line is that in October of 2018, he loses his phone. He goes to an AT&T store in Wilmington to get a new one. And literally across the street from that place is a gun store. And for reasons that are unclear, he decides to buy a 38 handgun. And there is a form he had to fill out when he bought that gun. And one of the questions on the form was, are you using controlled substances, right? And he answers no. And he tells friends that when he writes no, when he checks no in the box there, he believed that he was sober. Whether he was or not, I do not know. And so because of his addiction issues, it's really hard to know, you know, how intentional his behavior was, right? Mm-hmm. The same thing could be applied to the taxes. He doesn't file his taxes. That's undeniably true. But did he mean not to file his taxes, or was he just out of his mind?
And he ended up paying the taxes back, right? He got a loan from someone here in Los Angeles and paid the $2 million.
Yeah, that's like after his father is president. Right. So, you know, in 2021, he does that payment. Now, you asked about the laptop. So, you know, to be honest, it's similar to this gun purchase period. It's in this sort of period in Hunter's life where it's sort of like a blur, if you will. Is he sober this day or is he using that day? It's really hard to know. So the Republican story here is that he takes a laptop or laptops and goes to this repair shop in Wilmington and drops it off and never picks it up, right? Mm-hmm. I have no idea if that is true. You know, I have tried to figure that out. It's really hard to determine where he was on that day. The bottom line is that his emails were taken either because he left the laptop there or because he was hacked. You know, I don't know mm-hmm. what happens, right? But the bottom line is that a lot of his data is taken. And, you know, I've gone through, you know, I would say tens of thousands of those emails.
Are they public? Are they available for anyone to see?
Yeah, there are a few websites that are sort of affiliated with one former Trump official who created a website, which he says is nonpartisan, but I don't know. I don't know how he, you know, I don't know what the basis of that is. But anyways, bottom line is there are a few places you can go on the internet. Obviously, the New York Post and some others have published large quantities of this. But, you know, frankly, it's a very what's been publicized is a very selective curating, if you will, of the data. And if you really kind of go through it day by day, you actually get this picture that we're trying to describe, which is really somebody who's kind of in and out of rehab, you know, in and out of sobriety. He's just not really thinking all that clearly. And he's sort of careening into things. And he begins to, he meets a woman named Melissa Cohen, who becomes his second wife. They have sort of this very quick romance. And he begins to sober up. And, you know, he's sort of emerging from this fog, if you will, of the heavy drug use. And he's trying to basically figure out what the hell just happened, you know, realizing kind of the wreckage of his addiction period and trying to dig himself out from under it.
Gosh, it really is a tragic story. And in the Greek sense of the word, if you will, I mean, it's really sad. And the fact is that he is going to be the center of attention, negative attention, for the next 2 years, at least.
Yeah. I think for as long as his father is running for president or is president, there will be this sharp eye of attention on him, right? The visibility we have into his life is extraordinary, right? We don't have that of Jared Kushner or anybody else in a similar sort of position. And so it does provide an opportunity for us to try to get to the bottom of these things and try to figure out what's real, right? Which is, by the way, let me stress, the true story of Hunter Biden is not a flattering story, right? It's just not the story the Republicans are presenting when it comes to Joe Biden's involvement, as best as we can tell, based on the evidence we have available to us, again, of the level of Joe Biden's involvement in any of this, which, as best I can tell, was sort of, you know, sometimes his business associates would encounter Joe Biden, but the encounters are all very superficial based on my interviews with the people who were in those meetings, right? Or in those encounters.
So from what you've determined, there was no influence peddling with his dad. In fact, when it's all boiled down, the U.S. attorney in Delaware is looking at just a couple of possible charges: lying on that gun permit and not paying his taxes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, as best I can tell, based on the evidence that I have, you know, it's almost like the opposite of the story that the Republicans are saying. Like Hunter was actually with Holt trying to keep his father out of all this stuff, but he was sloppy about it. And his father, who was really worried about him, you know, the fear after Bo dies, after his older brother dies, you know, Hunter was told at least one very close friend, you know, I know you all think the wrong son died. Right.
And so
this is a guy who, you know, I think many people in the family and their close friends, they were worried about suicide. And so if you're the dad of a son like that, and you know, he's going through an incredibly hard time, because Joe Biden wants to be around his son whenever that opportunity presents itself, sometimes there are these other people around. And that's where you have the liabilities that happen that the Republicans have seized upon, because there's a dinner here, there's a dinner there, there's a business partner waiting in a rope line at Joe Biden's hotel that happens to be working with Hunter on a business deal in China. Over and over and over again, you have these encounters. And so it did create this liability, which is undeniable, and these questions, and it's very hard to know because, you know, journalists weren't there. I wasn't there to know for sure what was said. And so that's the issue.
Adam Entis, investigative reporter for The New York Times, where you can read his big investigation into Hunter Biden. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Coming up, how how Sinead O'Connor became the first big celebrity to be canceled, what led up to that moment in 1992 that ended her career. A new documentary tells that story. I'll speak with the director next on Press Play.